So you're with the Resistance?
Hello, what have we here?
I'm a big deal in the Resistance.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Resistance Radio. It's episode 8. Hope you all enjoyed last week's show, because this week we're talking about Obi-Wan Kenobi. As always, I'm Mikey B, and I'm joined by my co-host, Danya.
Hi, everyone.
We're also joined by Brent.
Hi, everybody. I'm Brent.
And Eric.
Hey, everyone.
Welcome back, Eric.
Good to be back.
As always, if you want to get a hold of us on Twitter, tweet us at rradiopodcast, leave a message on our Facebook, or send us an email through our website at resistanceradio.net, or leave a comment on this post when it goes up on hypeable.com.
So, I guess first things we're going to do is start off with a little announcement. So, if any of you are really enjoying the podcast and want to come and meet us, we are going to be appearing at Indie PopCon. It's a convention happening in Indianapolis. It is a very indie convention, as in it focuses a lot on creators like YouTube and podcasters, artists, that sort of thing. So we will have a little table there, and we may be doing a little live video podcast, but we will give a little bit more detail as we get closer to the convention. And when is it? June 17th to the 19th. So I will put a link to the website in the show notes, and then you can check it out for yourself if you want to attend.
I like we did there with the Indy, because it's an Indianapolis Indy, and you said it's an IndyCon. I got it. That was cool.
They're clever.
I know,
they're
right? So, as always, before we go into our news, welcome back, Eric. How are you doing?
Good. Doing well. Can't wait for next week's release of Force Awakens on Blu-ray. I can't wait to own it. That's sort of been my whole thing this week, is just kind of waiting and breathing heavy and waiting.
You know, I saw on the internets, of course, that some Targets had actually released it early.
There's pictures.
I know. So I actually went to Target today, and I'm like sneaking through. I'm like, where's that? And they have a whole like section already set up for it, and it has like a little sign that says, like, I almost should have taken a picture, because it's a piece of paper that says coming soon. Like, it's the spot is already there. It just says coming soon.
Did you see they were selling like pre-orders?
Yeah.
In like, but it was weird because it was like actual physical cardboard boxes that were like on end caps at Target, and then this was like months ago, and you basically buy a pre-order. You pay what you will pay on next Tuesday when it becomes available, but it was for a pre-order, and I think it maybe came with like a collector's card or something.
Yeah, it came with some small posters, like almost like sheets of paper size posters.
Yeah. Cool. So they've been selling the movie for months, but it's just,
I wanted a physical copy so I can stick it in
too,
and watch
me
it.
Me too, and I guess the digital too will be available.
Yeah, that'll actually be available on Friday the 1st.
So, oh, sweet.
Yeah, the digital comes out earlier. All right, and then we also have Brent. Welcome, sir, and you are the first time being on our show, so just like everyone else, since this is your first time, tell us a little about how you got into Star Wars, and just a little bit about you.
Well, I've been a fan for, since 1977. I stood
Woo!
In line. Yeah, I'm one of the old guys. Stood in line as a kid, and Star Wars has been part of my life since then.
That's awesome. I know. That's how I met you, through Star Wars.
Yeah, exactly.
And you just joined the 501st. You want to tell us a little bit about that real quick?
Yeah. I had seen these guys, on TV and other places, and wondered, who are these guys wearing this armor? Finally figured out, hey, this is a real thing. People do this in real life, And I thought, wow, that's something I would really like to do. Well, I figured out where to get the armor and put it together myself, which turned out to be one of the most nerve-wracking things I've ever done.
Was it more or less difficult than assembling an IKEA furniture?
It was very similar. The instructions were pretty much identical. Pictograph instructions.
Pictograph. It's like, did it come with all the tools like the IKEA furniture, though, or no?
It came with no tools.
Okay, oh, so that's
it, it was. Yeah. A, it, It was a big box of plastic. Mm-hmm. The first time I laid it out, I think I stood there for about half an hour scratching my head. thinking to myself, oh man, what did I get into?
Well, I've seen the assembled suit, so I think you did a good job on that.
Well, luckily there's a lot of resources out there. There's a lot of good guys that are willing to help and give you a lot of good information. And I worked through it, and I got accepted on March 19th into the 501st with Northern Darkness Garrison. And a week after that, I did my first troop and had a real good time.
Whoa.
That's kind of awesome. So we'll be excited to see you up at Indie PopCon with us also.
Oh, yeah. Just look for the white storm troop.
We'll be able to pick you out of the crowd, no problem, right?
Yeah. I'll be the one walking around.
All right. Well, let's move to our news. Honestly, this week I didn't feel like there was that much news. I think everything has kind of died down until the release of The Force Awakens on Blu-ray and DVD and digital. So much so that actually one of our big news pieces is all the promos for The Force Awakens and digital release have been coming up. Specifically, there's one about Kylo Ren walking on the Falcon.
No, he's not allowed.
What? He's visiting back home. He's like, hey, I used to hang out here, you know?
You know what? He's probably put in more time on that ship than all of us.
Yeah, so what do you guys think about some of these? You know, obviously we're going to see the deleted scenes in their fullness as soon as we get the digital release and the Blu-ray coming up, you know, next week or this week at the end of this week and next week. What do you guys think of the snippets we've been seeing that have come out?
It's not enough. I need all of them immediately.
Okay, but next week, right? Like, you're about to get everything done, yeah?
I'm basically going to be like a puppy waiting for the mailman. It's like...
Oh, that's adorable.
Like, be like, oh, why are you late for work, Danya? I was waiting for The Force Awakens to be delivered. Like, that's a legitimate excuse to be late for work.
Sure.
I hear a cough, cough, sniff, sniff. I'm calling in sick this day, you know. But yeah, no, it's definitely so. Some of the deleted scenes that we've seen is, like I said, Kylo Ren showing up on the Falcon. I can definitely see how this won't add to the story, but like, it was just really cool seeing him walk in with stormtroopers behind him. And, you know, it obviously looks like he knows what he's doing on that ship. Like, he knows his way around it.
Yeah. But that's like, I wonder what circumstances were originally in the movie for him to be able to board the Millennium Falcon. Like, I wonder where it occurred during the movie. I mean, obviously it occurred probably at the time of like when they're all at Starkiller Base, but I can't imagine that he would just have time to go and hang out on the Millennium Falcon when the base is slowly being ripped up. So I'm really curious as to what all that scene will entail.
I guess, yeah, that's actually something I didn't even think about. I just saw it and I was just like overwhelmed by the coolness of it.
Yeah, it's awesome. And then, like, I'm trying to think of like other things that we got previews of. I've been trying to stay away from some of the previews because I know they'll sweat my appetite and then I'll just be drooling for a week straight until I can get the movie, which is bad. But I do want to see. You remember when they like first, was it JJ or was it the official Star Wars tweeted? The day of the table read, when they had the photo of like everyone in the room.
Yeah, that was the very first photo of the original cast from the films, and the new cast were all together in one place.
I want to see more of that. Apparently, one of these special features is called "The Story Awakens," and it's people reflecting on the table read. But I'd be surprised if that one photo was the only thing they ever did that day.
There was a very, 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 very tiny clip where you get to hear Mark Hamill actually start reading the first little bit of the script.
Wait, what does he read? Because he doesn't have any lines in this movie.
No, that's what they did. He read the script to them. That was what the first table read was.
Oh, cool.
Yes. Like,
can you imagine how epic that was? No. I just release like a little extra DVD that just has that on, and I'll be happy for life.
Well,
someone's got to have filmed it. Someone in that room has to have filmed it.
Let's, like, give let's me approach the younger generation. Let's beat it out of them.
Yeah, so it looks like there's a lot of great, you know, extras that we've kind of come out, that they've come out with for this. So that's one of my favorite things. I don't even know if I get it, if I'm going to pop in the movie first or pop in just the extras. Now, hopefully all these extras come with digital too, because I also pre-ordered it digitally, so I can watch some of these hopefully on Friday. But
I hope so.
Yeah, just because, you know, I
can't wait. Has that ever happened? Like, do you do digital often and then they come with like the bonus features?
Yeah, at least iTunes, and I know Google Play does, like, they have their whole, like, when you load it up on like your TV, or I think maybe the iPad too, I don't think on the phones or anything like that, but like it gives you the option to like see like deleted scenes and extras and chapters and all that. So hopefully I'll be able to see some of this on digital, but you know, I'm excited for Force for Change, just because I know Star Wars has always been around with a lot of things related to charity, and I remember the Force for Change initiative they did for it. I did apply to try to get on the movie, but I wasn't the winner. But it's cool just to see that they've included something here for it.
And also this John Williams thing, it says John Williams, the Seventh Symphony. It says the legendary composer shares personal insights of his work on Star Wars and The Force Awakens. Now that I've found that that's going to be a bonus feature, I've found the thing I'm putting in first, for sure. Because John Williams, I mean, it really wouldn't be the Star Wars we know without John Williams. So I really want that for reasons.
Oh, yeah. Well, John Williams' music is just iconic in Star Wars and everything. In fact, I would almost liken it to kind of like the Harry Potter universe, how it was John Williams.
Also John Williams.
Also up until a certain point. And it's just one of those things where I will say I think the music in the first couple Harry Potter films was better. Not that the other composers weren't as good. It's just it wasn't as iconic. And they even used pieces of his work. So that was just awesome. Moving on, talking more about The Force Awakens, though, we also have a video from filmmaker Zachary Entel. It's a probably about 4 to 5 minute video of comparing the visual styles of The Force Awakens and A New Hope. You know, it's one of those things where a lot of people have already compared The Force Awakens and A New Hope to story-wise, like how similar they are. But I'm actually okay with the visual similarities between the two. I feel like it's a nice nod to it. And again, this is a 5 minute video, not even 5 minutes. I'm pulling it up right now. It's only 4 minutes long, with some shot comparison stuff. But I don't think like some of the shots, I don't think are even like comparison, like Finn taking his helmet off versus like Luke taking his helmet off when he's dressed as a stormtrooper. It's like, okay, how many different shots can you actually have when someone takes a helmet off? Like, I'm like, it's like taking a hat off. Like, how many different ways can you do it? Do you do it with one hand or two hands? Or is it, you know, it's like, okay, like,
just do some unnecessary parkour before you take your hat off. Like,
well, I can vouch for it. There's only about one way you can actually take that helmet off.
There you go. See, there it is. So there's only about one way you can take the helmet off. So similarity wise, like, okay, you know, it's, you know, it's, but I will say the video is actually really good. I would definitely take a chance to make sure you guys look at it. Brent, Eric, what'd you guys think of this video?
I didn't watch the video. Go ahead, Brent.
I thought it was really neat. The shot by shot comparison, I sat there, I think I had my mouth open the whole time. It was really eye opening. I really enjoyed it.
For me, I just love all of these comparisons, especially if it's like using evidence from the film to support it. Like, I would watch, isn't there also a video out there that like displays like parallel scenes? Character wise, I'm not 100% on that, but this, something like this, like, is bound to get made now that the film is coming out on home video. Not to get back to that, but you know, fan cuts and comparison videos, like, this is just the beginning. I think something like this is very interesting.
Yeah, and I think it's you know, it's one of those things where obviously, when you have a group of people gathered to talk, you know, you can compare the scenes, you know, before the Death Star to before they attack Star Killer Base or something like that. Like, visually, you know, there's only so many shots, a wide shot, medium shot, but it's kind of cool to see the parallel between the stories. I would almost like to see the same thing done with, like, Phantom Menace also, because I bet you, like, I can just think of right away off the top of my head, similar shots there. Maybe not Stormtrooper helmets, because there weren't any Stormtroopers in the Phantom Menace, but... You know, there's helmets and hats and things also. So, you know. Yeah. So I would love to see that too. Someone make that video for me. Yeah.
I was going to say, because the story is very cyclical in terms of, like, certain beats being hit across. Well, obviously we've only got The Force Awakens for now, but certainly in the original trilogy and prequel trilogy, there are a lot of similarities that you can pull between those as well. So it'll be really interesting as we get more as well, is seeing what story beats... like, kind of happen. It's like a history repeating itself kind of thing, which I find quite interesting, because it's something that we even see in real life a lot as well, so.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Speaking of, like, fan edits and different things, there was an older interview with Jake Lloyd that popped up on the internet. At least, I found it recently through Reddit, but basically Jake Lloyd interviews and talks about a 6-hour cut of The Phantom Menace. A 6-hour cut of The Phantom Menace. Like, it's like a 4 or 5 minute interview with Jake Lloyd. And this is not when he's like a little kid, so it's not like he's like, you know, just who knows. But it's a 6-hour cut of The Phantom Menace. Now, I don't care about what you guys think. I'll be honest, I don't care about what you guys think of The Phantom Menace. Like, I still love it for what it was. I may not like all the characters and the story decisions in it, but I still love what it was. I remember sitting in the theater, seeing the ship come in and see the two Jedi get out, and I'm like, oh my gosh, this is the coolest thing ever. Like, it's a new Star Wars movie. Like, in 99, I remember
this. I'm just going to jump in and say, I love Episode 1, and not just for what it was, but for what it wasn't, too. I love that movie.
Yes, you're right. So
I'm there with you, man.
So,
like, Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan in the beginning.
Exactly. Like, it was awesome. So, I'm wondering if, you know, maybe he just doesn't know enough about film, because I will tell you, like, I do know long cuts of films. Like, the first cut is usually what they call an assembly cut, where they kind of just assemble the entire film story-wise before the editor actually goes in and starts to cut it down. So I'm wondering if this 6-hour cut is an assembly cut, or if it's actually a cut of the film, and then George and the editor sat there and cut it down. Basically, in the Reddit thread, everyone's like, does anyone know where this is at? And no one knows. But, like, it's obviously they can link the reference of Jake Lloyd saying about this. What do you guys think of this 6-hour cut, possibly?
I'm speechless.
Like, what else did they extend the pod racing scene? Is that what it is?
on Tatooine, they pod race with it's 20 laps.
Yeah.
Well, in the novelization, like, I do remember the novelization. I haven't read it in a while, so don't quote me exactly on it, but I do know in the novelization there's a second race, the very first race before we see the one that we actually see in the film. Which is the one between Watto and Anakin, where he doesn't have a racer. Remember, you banged up the racer last time, like, and he has to use his own. There's that race in there also in the novelization. So I don't know. Who knows what they have here? But I would
could
love.
Could this possibly exist?
Could this exist? And if anyone has ideas for it, I would love to see it, even if it's, you know, not very good as a 6-hour cut and lots of bad beats to story wise, but. It'd be kind of cool to see a long cut of this. Maybe we'll see more of a Darth Jar Jar in this type of cut.
Star Wars, Too Fast, Too Furious.
if it was really 6.5 hours and they cut it down to, or 6 hours and they cut it down to 2.5, something went very wrong.
Well, no, but like I said, assembly cuts can be that long, no problem, because they shoot, you know, long takes and stuff, and, you know, when I mentioned beat, it's like the rhythm of a cut. Like, you might cut between two different cameras at a faster pace to kind of trim out time. You don't need to see someone walk through a door completely, you know. But those are things that might still be in there. So whether it's actually any better than what we actually have, who knows. But it is supposedly 6 hours, according to Jake Lloyd. And I know that's not new, but it's something that popped up recently. And if anyone has info, that'd be kind of fun. All right, moving on. BuzzFeed also talking about The Force Awakens extra features. BuzzFeed released a clip of Daisy Ridley's Force Awakens audition, and it's really interesting. There's an article like that kind of go along with it, and basically it talks about how J.J. Abrams was really concerned about finding this new lead role, just because they wanted her to be able to, you know, Rey to be such a pivotal character and do so many different things, and it wasn't until they found Daisy that they just felt like she was capable of doing all the things that was required of the character. So if you look at it, if you watch the video, it's actually pretty cool. It's Daisy doing one of the scenes of the interrogation scenes, and she just instantly, while there, has, you know, waterworks, tears start to come down her eyes and everything. Like, she's that range of acting was just something that made them instantly know that she was the one for this character. What do you guys think of that, like, with just Daisy and the new cast in general?
I mean, I love this little clip of her audition, because it just shows that she was instantly the character. Like, she just is Rey. And that was really cool, was just seeing, because you can see the similarities between that and what we actually got on the screen in the finished version. Like, that emotion is still there. And I absolutely love Daisy Ridley just so much. Just everything about her in all of, like, the press and media that she's done. Her role, I love Rey a lot as a character. I'm, like, completely in love with her. So it was really cool to see where it started off. And I love looking at audition tapes. I think that's really fun.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. Audition tapes are awesome, but also every second of everything that is spent seeing something new that Daisy Ridley has done has just increased my love for her tenfold. The fact that she was able to cry on demand here and basically just blow these guys away, and JJ, the way he talks about sort of that she had to be all these things, and they weren't sure that this character needed to be vulnerable and tough, sweet and terrified, and to find someone that no one knew who could do all these things took a lot of looking.
Yeah, no, it's, and I think just trying to get anyone to be able to act, you know, to be a strong actress or even actor, to be able to play that wide a range, especially someone who's an unknown, essentially, and that's what they were obviously looking for, because that's how the original trilogy was. And you know, I'm very happy with their choice of Daisy, and I'm excited to see who else they bring in for the films.
That's kind of what I was wondering too, though. Like, you mentioned similarities to the original trilogy, but like, I want to just praise the Force Awakens crew for making a character that needed to be all these things to begin with. You know, they wanted a female heroine who was strong, but yet vulnerable, but yet independent, but yet, you know, wanting to belong. All the things that Rey is that we love, the way that sort of the process just fascinates me, the way that you have this character. And then in Daisy, it is so well executed. It's like, it's really unbelievable how all of that came together.
Entertainment Weekly also has an interview with Adam Driver, and he praises the Episode 8 script, which I don't think any of us would go into it thinking Episode 8 won't be amazing, but it sounds like they've started to give the script to people who aren't on set yet. He's commented saying it's a testament to Rey coming into something very established and making it his own, so obviously there's going to be some uniqueness to the script that is specific to each director, because I know we have different directors in Episode 8 and 9. And Adam Driver says he can't wait to get on the set, just because it's the script they've come up with is really great. So hopefully it's not like a, you know, Rey and Luke training only fest. I
want. Oh, that's what I wanted.
I don't want 2 hours of that. Like, as much as I would love to see it.
Adam Driver, what does he have in this movie other than like flashbacks of when Rey had that terrible time with him, because she's going to be training with Luke the entire movie?
No,
that's what I want. No. I don't know about you guys.
Well, it's, you know, there's going to be that heartfelt scene where Luke tells Rey that, you know, she's his daughter. And then there's going to be...
What's the goddamn episode?
Every episode. Now, all right, before we go any further, Brent was actually texting me earlier today, and I said, save it for the show. I'm going to just bring it up right now. Brent had an idea that Rey was not Luke's daughter, and I kind of like his theory. Brent, you want to just say it real quick?
Well, you know, I'm a Star Wars Rebels fan, and I'm hoping they cross over the Rebels series to the movie. And since they cast Benicio del Toro, every time I see him, I see an older Ezra Bridger. I today came up with the wild fan theory that Rey is a Bridger and not a Skywalker.
And that would tie the shows together.
And here is why I thought that. She was sitting there with a helmet in the first one, and Ezra collected helmets. I don't know why I made that connection.
Ooh, yeah. So, it's
my own crazy theory.
I like it, though.
Crazy theory.
I still think that she's Luke's daughter, but I really like the theory. I really like the theory because I already have an idea that I think Snoke is actually Ezra, and we're going to see Benicio del Toro in a flashback scene of Snoke, and that's how they're going to tie it all together. But, you know, that's just me, you know, thinking about it.
Well, and the Skywalkers have always been kind of, you know, angsty male characters, and we've got an angsty male character already. So Rey being a female character could be somebody totally different.
I was going to say, and technically, Kylo Ren is Skywalker adjacent, so...
Yeah, I guess. All right. We'll see how this one plays out. But yeah, no, I really like that. And speaking of Star Wars Rebels, see how I use that to lead into it, right? Yeah. This week is the season finale of Star Wars Rebels. I'm super excited to be able to watch it just because all the clips that have been coming out with Darth Maul and everything leading to it. So next week is going to be our recap of Star Wars Rebels Season 2. So if you are a fan of Star Wars Rebels, please tweet at us. Let us know your opinions of the show, of this how the whole season came out. Email us any questions about Star Wars Rebels because we're going to be talking about that next week. But talking about Rebels and those other things, David Filoni also tweeted at someone that Rex is actually in Empire Strikes Back as the old guy on Endor. What do you guys think of that? Like, Rex has been around through the Clone Wars and then Rebels, and now he might be in the original trilogy.
With the clone aging, that's the only problem I have with it.
Yeah, the clones do have the accelerated aging. That's why and in 10 years they have a fully grown army from there. But yeah, no, I agree with the clone the aging issue could be the one thing there. But we've seen them tackle that issue in like extended universe stuff before. And I will say, Dave Filoni also loves to bring back some extended universe stuff, you know, with Revan and Darth Bane and stuff like that that he's included in Clone Wars. And obviously, we'll find out more about what he includes in this Sith Temple. But of course, they go to Malachor, which is from Knights of the Old Republic, if you've played the game, anybody.
Oh my god, guys, I forgot to tell you this, Mikey. I just started replaying that game again.
The first one, second one?
The first one. I'm on Terrace still right now, but I'm like on the Undercity of Terrace, and I just got I just completed my Pazak deck with everything that I wanted from those merchants.
That's awesome. Yeah, BioWare actually supports this podcast. They gave us some stuff to give out for Star Wars The Old Republic.
That is amazing.
Yeah. So we gave some stuff out a couple episodes ago. But what do we think about Rex hanging out as this possible old guy on Endor?
I mean, it's kind of fun. I like it because it ties everything back together again, which is all I really want from, I guess, the movies and Rebels. They happen in the same universe, and I would like them to tie everything together, so that would be really great.
Who is this guy?
Captain Rex is... All right, so for those that don't know, thank you, Eric, Captain Rex is introduced in Star Wars The Clone Wars series. He is one of the troopers, the clone troopers, that is always alongside of Anakin Skywalker and Ahsoka Tano and Obi-Wan. He's kind of really good friends with them. Well, Rex is also found in Star Wars Rebels. Beginning of Season 2 is when, maybe it was the end of Season 1, but I'll have to go rewatch all of it before the finale this week. But Rex is just a continued trooper who did not fall to Order 66, the end of Return of the Jedi, or Revenge of the Sith.
Yeah.
And in Return of the Jedi, there's this old guy with a grizzled white beard on Endor during the final battle. And David Filoni says that is Rex, which would be kind of cool. What I was thinking about this, so here it is. What might be interesting is if Rex makes his way somewhere into Rogue One.
Mm.
You know, we haven't seen any Rogue One news, and we have the end of Rebels right now, the end of the season, the end of Force Awakens coming out on Blu-ray and DVD and everything, and hopefully soon we'll start to see some stuff about Rogue One. Soon, eventually, maybe. But it would be really cool if they tie this one. Maybe this one character is the character that ties all this kind of extended media stuff together.
I'm just thinking, like, this is the one person that just shows up every month. He's like been in the background the whole time.
Yeah, he's the Forrest Gump of the Star Wars universe.
Yeah,
but I. Oh, I have to say, I think that Rogue One, thinking about all this, is like a really good opportunity for, or presents a really good opportunity for any of that, where you're taking these characters that have been obviously created, conceived and created after the original trilogy, but putting them in the universe and solidifying that they are, in fact, there, especially on film. Because the Clone Wars is obviously set earlier, and Rebels, and so it's, you know, putting them in the time period of the original trilogy without having to do like another special edition of the original trilogy. So it's really the best of both situations.
Yeah, it would just be fun to see, you know, some of these characters alive on film, like you said. Alrighty, so on to our spotlight topic. We have Obi-Wan, old Ben Kenobi here.
That wizard's just a crazy old man.
He's just a crazy old man. Leave him alone, right? Out beyond the Dune Sea. So, obviously, Obi-Wan is very prevalent in the prequels. And we were introduced to him very early on in A New Hope. What is the disconnect between the original Obi-Wan and the prequel Obi-Wan?
So, like, we meet him in A New Hope after some time. And R2 is the one who claims to be the property of an Obi-Wan Kenobi. It sort of sets the whole plot in motion. Reuniting Luke with Obi-Wan is key. Obviously, we know from the prequels that Obi-Wan has been keeping an eye on Luke. Luke definitely knows his name. It's kind of like a, forgive me for the Harry Potter crossover, it's kind of like a Mrs. Fig, Harry Potter type relationship at that point. But basically, like when they meet up, there's a lot of those iconic lines from Alec Guinness. But they obviously, through the passage of time, the role of Obi-Wan changed, the role of Yoda, really, because at the beginning of Empire Strikes Back, the ghost of Obi-Wan appears to Luke. So he says, "Go to the Dagobah system. There you will learn from Master Yoda, Yoda, the Jedi Master who trained me." So fast forward to Episode 1, and Yoda is not, in fact, Obi-Wan's master. It's Qui-Gon, this new guy who is awesome. But essentially, I think the role, you know, changed there between like who Obi-Wan's master was. And I think honestly, like you go through Return of the Jedi even, and when Obi-Wan, Alec Guinness, and Yoda are together, he says things like Yoda calls Luke stubborn, and he's like, and Obi-Wan says, "Was I any different when you taught me?" You know, to be honest, a lot of that doesn't really add up to the prequels. So I'm kind of interested in just this idea of what was Obi-Wan in the original, what's sort of the inferred backstory of the original trilogy versus what we see in the prequels? And are there any important, like, discrepancies there?
Yeah, you know, I'll argue that him going to see Yoda, I feel like Yoda kind of taught all the Jedi. You know, he's around for 900 years and stuff like that. And it was one of those things where I almost saw it as obviously his direct master, because we didn't understand how Jedi were trained when the original trilogy were out. I don't think it was even fleshed out and talked about that much, where you had
Council?
A Jedi Knight and a Padawan. Like, you didn't know that there was, like, a one-on-one type training. Maybe it was a class or something like that. You know, who knows? Yeah. Obviously there was no reference to a Qui-Gon Jinn, but I think Yoda kind of did teach Obi-Wan, and he taught everyone else. Especially, you have to remember, Obi-Wan after the Phantom Menace is still a Padawan. He's not even a Jedi Knight yet. At the end of it, Yoda tells him, you know, they've conferred the rank of Knight to him. You know, they've given that to him, even though, you know, when Qui-Gon wanted to take on Anakin as his, you know, new Padawan, but he obviously couldn't have more than one. And so they agreed to let Obi-Wan take Anakin on as his Padawan. So it's one of those things where Obi-Wan taught, or Yoda taught Obi-Wan a lot until Obi-Wan was actually becoming Jedi Master. So I think, you know, he still was his, you know, teacher, just maybe not his direct one that we see.
Yoda was also teaching the younglings in the temple also.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you could consider that part of the teachings.
So do we think then Obi-Wan was ever stubborn? Because to me, the character of Obi-Wan was never stubborn. That was all Anakin. It may be Luke, but it was rarely Obi.
I mean, if you consider the fact that he was a kid once, aren't all kids stubborn at certain points?
Maybe, but why is 70-year-old Obi-Wan remembering that he was stubborn to Yoda? Like, when it's relevant to the Luke situation. Well, anyway, I'm not trying to point out, like, flaws here. I'm saying, you know, conceptually, 30 years ago, you know, in the 70s, when these movies were being made, the 70s and 80s, you know, what changed? And kind of the Obi-Wan played by Ewan McGregor, who is awesome, ended up, I think, in the end, in the reverse order, melding really carefully and really closely with the Obi-Wan we see in A New Hope.
Yeah, I think Ewan McGregor did a phenomenal job kind of looking back at, you know, Alec Guinness and taking on the mannerisms and everything. But I think when it comes down to, you know, the disconnect between them, between the original Obi-Wan and the prequel Obi-Wan, like what changed, you know, backstory-wise, I don't think anything changed. I don't think there was ever a backstory completely flushed out for it. And it's one of those things where I would say Obi-Wan was pretty headstrong and stubborn. I think he grew out of it because, you know, he was adamant to teach Anakin as the dying wish of Qui-Gon. Even though, you know, it's obvious that Yoda and even the rest of the Jedi Council had reservations about allowing Anakin to be trained because he was too old, there was fear in him, they were worried about all this. So I think, you know, I think from a certain point of view, Alec Guinness. Yeah. Right? You see what I? Alec Guinness.
Yeah,
was, you
know, I saw it.
Old Obi-Wan was remembering correctly, and you got to remember, you know, Obi-Wan in the original trilogy, both as a live Obi-Wan and after as a Force ghost, he was kind of cryptic. He never really. I would almost say he didn't speak like straight truths. You know, he never really kind of came out and said like, "Oh, this is how this really was." Even so much that, like, talking about, you know, a pupil of mine, Darth Vader, struck down your father, you know like, right. That sort of thing. Like, you know, once you, when you find that out in the original trilogy, like, you know, forget the prequels, right? When you find that out in the original trilogy, you know, that Darth Vader is Luke's father, you know, by Darth Vader telling him, and then Yoda confirming it, and then, you know, Luke asking Ben, "You never told me," and he's like, from a certain point of view, like, that's the argument that he has, and, like, I guess it's, you know, I take it as like the wizened old man not wanting to put a burden on someone who has already a big challenge ahead of him. So I think it's the same thing. Like, I think he was stubborn enough to take on a challenge of training somebody like, you know, Ewan McGregor taking on training, you know, Anakin. And so I think, yeah, he was stubborn. And that's why Yoda, you know, he had to remind Yoda that was he any different.
Mm.
I don't know.
I mean, let's be real. The biggest discrepancy here is how much he aged between Revenge of the Sith and A New Hope, considering it was about, what, it was 19 years between the two, right?
You know, the Dune Sea is really, just puts those years on you.
You know, I mean, sand, it gets everywhere.
Oh, no! No!
You know, here's the thing. I agree, like, him aging significantly between that's 19 years, but I'll chalk it up to, like, what Eric said. You know, it's the sand, the dune sea. You know,
poor diet.
You know, poor diet.
Little to no exercise.
Well, I don't know about that, but, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, he is living a hard life. You know, I think Uncle Owen says, you know, he's a hermit, you know, or Luke says it's a hermit, you know, old Ben, the hermit who lives out past the dune sea. Yeah. You know, it's, if he's a hermit, he's living out there, he's probably fending for himself. He probably doesn't go to the grocery store very often and get that blue milk. And, you know, he's, I could just imagine him going out and, like, hunting his own food or eating, you know, growing his own little vegetables with his own little moisture farm. Like, he's not living a life of luxury. He's living a solitude life, you know, in the desert where it's hot, it's gross, and, you know, he's probably training still, you know? Like,
yeah, maybe his life force was sucked away because he was training so much. I don't know. But then again, look, Alec Guinness, Obi-Wan didn't die of old age as a character. You know, he was struck down, so his age is almost irrelevant. I mean, he was old enough to be a mentor, but, I mean, ultimately, you could just assume that he was younger than he looked.
Yeah, and, you know, we see it, like I said, you know, it's the desert that made him look older, but, you know, he is the right age, Danya, to be a grandpa, because, you know, he was an adult when Luke was born, you know, and he was like kind of the adult when, Anakin was still 10 years old, so, you know, he was the grandpa age, you know. But speaking of that, speaking back to the prequels, you know, Ewan McGregor as Obi-Wan, do you guys think Obi-Wan's character, we never actually talk about it, but do you guys think Obi-Wan's character would have actually helped Anakin and Padme? Obviously, he knew about them, and he doesn't really confront Anakin about it till Anakin has already gone so far gone, and they're on, you know, they're about to fight and everything. Do you think Obi-Wan would have helped Anakin and Padme out with their kids? Would he have become like Uncle Obi or something like that?
Yes, absolutely. I think he would have. I mean, he says, and even though it's in the scene where he's basically killing or like defeating Anakin, he's basically like, you are my brother. So I would assume that they have a close enough relationship that if everything hadn't gone to hell, pretty much, that he would have helped them out.
I believe that he would have helped them out. Yes, I do. And that's going back to the Clone Wars series, actually, where Obi-Wan had a clandestine romance.
Huh.
You remember that?
Yeah, with what's her name from Mandalore? Geez, now I'm going to have to look it up. But yeah, you know, I understand, like, Obi-Wan has these character flaws seen through, because, you know, it's interesting. Obi-Wan is in the Clone Wars series. He's in the prequels. He's in the original films. And he's also in The Force Awakens. You know, his voice is, at least, in a very pivotal scene.
Well, there's your Forrest Gump of Star Wars. It's Obi-Wan.
He wasn't in Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi, just as it goes. So, you know, it's one of those things where, I don't know, his character between the two, I don't think there's a disconnect, and I don't think he would have approved of Anakin and Padme's relationship. Not that he didn't have his own clandestine kind of relationship, but I think he may have not actually acted further on it. Again, because Clone Wars didn't go too far into his relationship other than, you know, he had feelings for her. But I think he would have, you know, said, Anakin, what did you do? You know, but he would have helped out in the end. He would have been like the bigger brother or the father who understands. It's like, oh no, you know, you got her pregnant but it's all right. You know, you're going to do the right thing and you're going to raise these kids well. Yeah, I think he would have been a good uncle, grandfather to Luke and Leia if he didn't, get killed by Anakin.
Well, I was going to say, if Padme hadn't gotten killed by Anakin, or, you know, had stayed alive, I don't think she would have let Anakin or Obi-Wan in the house, like, near the kids. Because if you think about it, like, Obi-Wan should have known about... If he knew about Anakin and Padme, that's where your mentor cap has to kick in again. And you really need to weigh the options. Like, a problem that I have with the prequels, and I love the prequels, but a problem that I have with it is, you know, the Jedi teach abstinence or not getting, you know, emotionally entangled. There's a very good reason why, which is that the fear of loss can drive you to the dark side. So when Anakin has something that he's very likely to lose, it should really throw some red flags out there for Obi-Wan. And it just is something that never seems to before it's too late. Obviously, it's the story of the tragedy, right? And there, Obi-Wan finds out, but it's only just, you know, too late to really act on it, which is a little upsetting because I think if he did know, he really should have done something about it. And I think he would be an effective teacher, but it's just kind of marred in the whole Palpatine, you know, really hiding and disguising a lot of things from the Jedi and Anakin sort of trusting Palpatine over Obi-Wan. But I kind of fault Obi-Wan for not kind of realizing fully what was going on.
So would you say that Obi-Wan was like the too mellow kind of dad? Like he was the cool dad that let his kid do a lot of things he probably shouldn't have done?
It's hard because you get like an amazing scene, like the flying scene in is it Attack of the Clones where they're going around Coruscant?
Yeah, right at the beginning of Attack of the Clones after when they're chasing down Zam after the assassination attempt on Padme.
Yeah, exactly. And I realize like it's before all hell breaks loose, but they really do have like a fun relationship, even though one is the mentor and one is the student. You know, so I don't know about like if he was just always the cool dad, but I think, you know, maybe it goes back to Qui-Gon's judgment because Qui-Gon said, you know, Obi-Wan was ready. And maybe it's just that here's a question for all of you guys. Do you think that had Qui-Gon not died, would he have been able to spot and basically stamp out the trouble with Anakin?
Oh, that is a good question.
I mean, it's all speechless for a minute there.
Because, like, if it doesn't... Because if you think he would have, then actually we all think there's a problem with Obi-Wan. You know, some kind of flaw there.
Well, you know what? I would say there is a problem with Obi-Wan, and it's mentioned in The Phantom Menace. You know, he isn't mindful of the living force, you know, of what's exactly around him. You know, he turns a blind eye to the relationship. And actually, it's seen also in Attack of the Clones. You know, when Obi-Wan gets captured on Geonosis, he relays a message. Like, one, Anakin's not where he's supposed to be, where he's been told to go. Like, he's already disobeying orders. Like, he snuck out of his room, and he's gone to, you know, Tatooine because his mom, you know. Like, I can't blame Anakin for doing what he did, but he, you know, didn't follow the orders that his mentor, you know, his... you know, teacher told him to, right? So he's not where he's supposed to be. And then, instead of just relaying the message to what's happened, he actually comes and chases after him, where they both end up getting caught. You know, they're not, like, together. So you see this here, and I think it's just one of those things where Obi-Wan maybe wasn't stern enough. Didn't, you know, he became the friend. Like you mentioned, Danya, that at the end of Revenge of the Sith, you know, he does say, "You were my brother." You know, it's obviously that he blurred the line there. And so there is a problem with the way Obi-Wan taught, the way Obi-Wan was teaching. Maybe he wasn't ready. And so that would be a fault on Qui-Gon at the same time. But, you know, Qui-Gon was also very headstrong. You know, Obi-Wan tells him that at one point in time, you would be on the council if you would just follow the rules. so obviously Qui-Gon is a very strong Jedi. He had taught, you know, many people. You know, so much so that he, you know, he even taught, what do you call it? Or he was taught by Tyrannus, Count Dooku.
Yeah.
So they had a relationship too. So obviously Qui-Gon's not perfect by any means. And so he, whatever faults he had, he instilled into Obi-Wan. I almost feel like it's a game of telephone, you know, from like the perfect Jedi teachings of maybe Yoda. It's handed down, and it gets distorted and messed up a little bit to the point where something like what happened to Anakin and Obi-Wan, the rift between them and the fault of the dark side had to happen. So, yeah, there is a problem with the way he taught. Could you blame him? Probably not. He taught Anakin to the best of his ability, I believe. Does that make sense?
And it was prophesized that it was all going to hell, so it's okay that it did.
Yeah, he brought balance to the Force by killing all the Jedi.
I mean, the other thing I would say is that a flaw in Obi-Wan is probably that he cares too much as well, especially about Anakin. Because if you think about, as well, the Jedi teachings and them saying that they shouldn't get married, they shouldn't fall in love. Well, love doesn't have to be romantic either, you know. There is a familial love that means that you will do anything for someone and you can get that close. So Anakin almost becomes his blind spot. You know, love takes very many different forms. And I think that what Obi-Wan and Anakin had was a kind of familial love through the entire prequel trilogy. That means that where possibly Qui-Gon, if he had remained alive, may have been able to disassociate from a little bit and be able to see things with almost like a wider lens, with a little bit more clarity. For Obi-Wan, he's he's too blindsided by the fact that he cares so much about Anakin as a friend, as a brother, pretty much. So I think that you also have to take that into account a little bit as well, that Anakin is basically Obi-Wan's blind spot.
I like that a lot, actually. And you know what? I was thinking when you were saying that about the line that old Obi-Wan gives to Luke about, Darth Vader, a pupil of mine before he turned evil, like seduced Anakin or whatever. It just makes it seem like it totally removes Obi-Wan of the guilt. Like he's just basically says it in a way that, oh, something happened and Anakin went to the dark side. It doesn't really have to do anything with Obi-Wan's failure to notice the signs. It's just kind of something funny, like in his old age, he, in not being clear to Luke, he kind of also just shooed away the guilt for what happened, essentially.
Yeah, you know, but can you really blame him, though? You know, if someone made that big of an error in judgment, you know, he obviously goes on to reflecting. You know, he's on Tatooine, right? Mm-hmm. And so he's reflecting on it, and Yoda even tells him, I have training for you, too, which is where he can meditate and communicate. And talk to Qui-Gon, you know, commune with Qui-Gon awesome. On there. Mm-hmm. But it's one of those things where if you messed up that bad, where you are kind of the fault, you know, you are almost the reason for the downfall of the Jedi Order, because you were too buddy-buddy pals with your Padawan. You didn't mm-hmm. step up and teach him correctly. You didn't get others involved. You know, you didn't prevent, you know... Actually, it's really interesting. You didn't prevent Sidious from tempting Anakin, which is similar to where maybe Luke didn't prevent, Snoke, you know, tempting to Ben. And it,
that's
you
know, interesting.
Yeah, so the similarities are there. And it's interesting that both Obi-Wan is kind of exiled almost and to meditate, and Luke is the same thing on Ahch-To. He's meditating, or at least we're assuming he's meditating. He didn't go... You know, maybe he's just on a fishing trip, who knows, but a really extended, long fishing trip. They're big fish out there. But, you know, it's who knows? Like, but they have that very similarity that they're both contemplating what they did right and what they did wrong. Because obviously, Obi-Wan did a lot of things right. But at the same time, his biggest flaw was, or his biggest error was not, you know, like you said, he wasn't stern enough. He didn't see the signs. He didn't do something to stop him.
And to answer your question, I don't really blame Obi-Wan for what he tells Luke, because essentially they have a whole new mission, right? There's this new hope in the galaxy to fix everything, and Obi-Wan needs Luke. It's a bit like the argument of you tell him only as much as you need to get him to go. Like, he knew that Luke's destiny was bigger than being a moisture farmer on this outer rim planet. You know, and he essentially takes him and he knew that he was strong with the Force, and he begins to train him. You know, essentially Obi-Wan kind of redeems his self by putting Anakin's son on the right path, not only for saving the life of, you know, his son and watching over him all these years, but essentially for training him and eventually having him overthrow, you know, the dark side the way that he does. It's a little redemptive arc there.
Yeah, and we also saw Obi-Wan even in The Force Awakens. Like you said, he's the Force Gump of the Star Wars saga. he never eats a box of chocolates, though. But Obi-Wan, or Ewan McGregor, recorded the line, "Rey, these are your first steps." And obviously there's been a lot of articles about JJ talking about it and Ewan McGregor talking about it. But what do you guys think about when he actually tells Rey that these are her, you know, her first steps, these are your first steps that you're taking? Obviously, there's voice of Yoda in there and also Alec Guinness to blend it in. So it's like these really powerful Force users are talking to her when she has that vision. What do you guys think about just Obi-Wan even guiding Rey in the new movie?
I want more. I absolutely want more of it. I want to see, even if it's, I mean, it would have to be Ewan McGregor, and not Alec Guinness, but I want to see Force ghosts of Yoda, Obi-Wan. Like, they were so present in the events of Empire and Jedi, and they show up at the end of Jedi. It's very hopeful that eventually in time, you expect to see those same ghosts again.
I was going to say, maybe this is their way of keeping them present, because obviously you can assume that what she's tapped into is just the Force in general. Like, it's not necessarily
the Skywalker group chat. Like the iMessage group of Yoda and Obi-Wan.
You just can't leave this conversation. You just keep getting added back into it.
But basically just tapping into just the Force in general for the first time. And you know that they are such a powerful presence in that from obviously what we know from the original trilogy. So having them be that kind of guiding voice that she initially hears. I mean, I think it's just a really nice nod to like remember like how prevalent they are in the story of Star Wars. And like kind of helping her with just launching her, like just guiding her ever so slightly.
Alrighty. So I do have one other thought that I haven't written down and I just came to mind. So we've talked about a Han Solo solo film. Get it? Solo film. Anyway.
It should just be called Solo. And it should open up on a weekend where nothing else is opening, you know, wow. And it should only be in one city in the whole world.
But Ewan McGregor has also said he'd be up for a Obi-Wan Kenobi solo film. Star Wars story, if you will. I'm almost wondering if it would be something just between, like, on Tatooine, him, his life as the hermit that we kind of talked about. What if it was more like, you know, because you see Marvel has done these different types of movies. You know, Ant-Man was not really a superhero film, but more of a heist film. Like a
heist film.
Yeah, like Ocean's 11, if you will, right? And Doctor Strange is supposed to be kind of like a horror-type film and stuff like that. What if, like, the Obi-Wan film was kind of like a Raiders of the Lost Ark, like an Indiana Jones set in Star Wars type of adventure film on Tatooine. You already have the desert there. You have, you know, dragons he can ride, you know, Krayt dragons he can ride. And, you know, there's Beggar's Canyon that we know about. Like, what if, like, there was an Obi-Wan film that took place in between, you know, Revenge of the Sith and A New Hope, and it was all about the adventures of Obi-Wan Kenobi? What would you guys think of that?
I mean, I think that would be quite fun. Around the time when a lot of the Han Solo kind of news started coming out, I was talking with other people about the potential for like an Obi-Wan solo movie as well. We were talking about how hilarious it would be if, for example, Luke's been getting himself into trouble the entire time he's been on Tatooine, and you've just got, from the other side, Obi-Wan running interference to stop him from getting into trouble and saving him. So I think it would be quite amusing to see something like that, personally. Like, I would love to see Obi-Wan's adventures on Tatooine, though.
For me, I would almost more... I like the idea of an Obi-Wan standalone film, but I would prefer that it be the origin story of how Obi-Wan met and befriended Dexter Jetster.
Ooh, yeah. Kind of like almost because you know Dex was the diner from the guy from the diner talking
the
about
guy from the diner
yeah, the guy from the diner
this is
versus...
actually a joke but yeah why not yeah, why not why, why not? Wouldn't it be
the
cool
guy from the diner talking about wisdom versus knowledge right uh-huh. It's like can you just imagine it'd be like you know like a buddy cop type film you know Obi-Wan and you know with young Qui-Gon, young Obi-Wan that'd be pretty
oh gosh that'd yeah be... anything that's like more Liam Neeson but also like I mean, anything Obi-Wan would be totally awesome from any time period. I mean, I wouldn't want it to necessarily overlap the time period of, you know, Clone Wars between, you know, and sort of flesh out his relationship with Anakin more. I guess we all realize how that ends, so maybe they'll have to do something fully unique. But I'm not sure there's enough, like, story in there for him to just be on Tatooine, even if he's raiding Krayt dragon fossils, like caves where they exist. Like even so, you know, I think a lot of that is probably just best left untouched. I don't know where they would set it or when they would set it, but yes, I would love it because I think Obi-Wan is that great character. He's the original old man mentor, and even the way that he's played younger by Ewan McGregor is just so appealing. you do kind of... I left Revenge of the Sith wanting to see more of Obi-Wan, so if that says anything.
Obi-Wan and his sand dollar collection. He goes around collecting sand dollars.
I want to see a Obi-Wan presents the planets of the Outer Rim, where he explains the differences between Tatooine and Jakku. And it's just kind of like maybe they do a TV series where he's like introducing all these other planets that are going to come into play in the later films.
Like that's what I want to see. Web series.
Yeah, like a little web series. Yeah, that's what I want to see.
So I just see you dressing up as Obi-Wan, Eric, to do this. I'm sorry. Like,
if I could grow facial hair, I totally would, but I can't.
To eBay.
To eBay.
Pretty sure they sell the like costume stuff that you can use to make that happen. We can make it happen. New YouTube series. Let's go.
Yeah. But Obi-Wan presents, or Obi-Wan Kenobi presents. And I'll begin every episode by saying, Rey is not my daughter.
Okay. Yeah. Anyway, anything else about Obi-Wan? Brent, you know, anything on Obi-Wan?
But yeah, I'm totally down for Obi-Wan or any other characters they want to make movies about. I'll be right there in line.
I'll be there too.
It's so good to hear Star Wars fans for life, right?
Yeah.
Totally.
So, I have one last thought on Obi-Wan. Kind of going back to the Clone Wars, and Brent brought this up, is, you know, Obi-Wan had kind of a relationship, but it was never really fleshed out. Like, what if they did a story about that? Like, you know, if you guys remember Daredevil, I know, what was her name? I didn't look it up, I should in a minute. But remember Daredevil, not Daredevil, Deadpool. Well, Deadpool.
Like Deadpool. Deadpool. Like, Daredevil would be Elektra.
No. Remember in Deadpool, they even did a trailer cut that was like a love story, but obviously Deadpool was not a love story.
Vanessa.
But
if I mean,
what if they did something like that, like the whole thing, and then it's just like a super action packed, like Obi-Wan Kenobi, ultimate badass, you know, type thing. But they kind of spun it as like a love story.
Oh god!
I make everyone speechless.
Be like some Jane Austen craziness.
I've pulled up the name. It's a.
It's Vanessa. The Deadpool.
Yes, her. No. Her, yeah, Brent pulled it up. I just pulled it up also. It's Satine Chrisin. It's the. She was not the queen. What was it? She was something of Mandalore.
She was a duchess.
She was the duchess. There we go. Thank you, Brent. So Satine was the Duchess of Mandalore, and that's who Obi-Wan had kind of a relationship with. I'd be okay to see kind of a love story type thing slash, you know, Deadpool epic battle between, you know, because you got to remember during that whole Clone Wars like story arc where she was in, they had Death Watch also. So you would have like this really cool like, Merc type mercenary Mandalores versus Jedi, you know, him protecting his love. So, which they obviously showed in Clone Wars, but it'd be kind of cool to see it fleshed out further as a story in the movie.
Sure.
All right. Anything else about Obi-Wan Kenobi, my friends?
He rocks.
He rocks out to when?
He rocks harder than Geonosis on a rock fall day.
Oh, wow. Anyway, thank you all for listening to this week's episode of Resistance Radio and our conversations and ramblings on Obi-Wan Kenobi. As always, my name is Mikey.
I'm Danya.
I'm Brent.
And I'm Eric.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode.
Great to be back. See you next time.
Bye-bye. I'm Obi-Wan Kenobi.
You guys need...
Remember, the Force will be with you always.